Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. Today, we have a great guest coming to us all the way from North Carolina. Welcome, Alexa, onto the Galvanize and Restore show. Alexa Arciero is from Charlotte, North Carolina, and holds a degree in media and journalism from UNC Chapel Hill. In addition to being Youth for Abolition's director, she is the communications manager for an organization called On Eagle's Wings, which is the Youth for Abolition's parent organization. Alexa is passionate about protecting and empowering the next generation. She is honored to be leading her team of young people in preventing human trafficking in the Carolinas. Welcome. I'm so excited to have you here today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Jessica.
Yes. And before we jump into all the wonderful and more serious questions I have for you today, here's a little icebreaker question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So how long would you last in a zombie apocalypse?
I love that question. My first thought is I would not last long at all. I would say definitely the people who know me would agree with that. If I have a place to maybe hide or a group of stronger people to maybe.
Okay, that's good thinking.
Onto, yes. I would definitely probably get along a lot longer and faster.
Maybe
I'm, find, I'm definitely not prepared for something like that.
Same. I feel like it's something that kind of crosses my mind here and there. I'm like, okay, what would I actually do? But I mean, I don't believe a zombie apocalypse is gonna happen.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, goodness. Like just in what if you ever seen one of those movies like the I Am Legend, Will Smith?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You kind of think of you start thinking about it, and you're like, man, he's the only person left. Like, what's gonna happen? Like,
that's much worse. If you're being alone versus like. If there's just a bunch of chaos going around, I don't know if I could last alone.
And he was actually really smart too. He was investigating and doing scientific like lab studying, trying to find a cure. I wouldn't even think about that. I'd be like, how do we grow some food? Or
yeah, right. I know. That's so true.
Where do we hide?
Trying to have as much fun as possible.
Yeah. I'm with you though on it. I would definitely probably not either. I think my survival method would be find a yacht and like just go out to the sea.
That's clever. It's very clever.
I'm probably thinking like that because I'm in Florida. So it's like we're really close to the water.
Close to the ocean. Yeah. Smart.
Let's escape.
Smart. Gotta use your resources.
Yes. So let's get down to business here. Mm-hmm. So you work for a wonderful organization called On Eagle's Wings.
That's
Could you
correct,
tell us a little bit about what this organization does and how it all got started?
Absolutely. Yes. So On Eagle's Wings, OEW for short is sometimes how we refer to it. But On Eagle's Wings was founded in 2007 in Asheville, North Carolina. And our mission is to both prevent child sex trafficking and restore and empower young survivors. And we do that through three key programs. So that's Youth for Abolition, which is our prevention program. It's peer-to-peer, youth-led. And then OEW Hope House is our safe house and community-based services for survivors of sex trafficking. Wow. And then Fields of Hope is our third program, and that's our work empowerment and life skills training program for survivors. And On Eagle's Wings as an organization got started thanks to a Christian recording artist, Natalie Grant.
That's so nice.
So she provided an unsolicited major gift in 2007 that enabled the launch of our first safe house. Wow. And then Youth for Abolition and Fields of Hope got started in 2014. This coming year, we're going to be celebrating 10 years of Youth for Abolition.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
So, yeah, really exciting.
Wow. How did it – so initially it started with Natalie Grant. Was it through – like how did she find out or how did
I believe our founder had been speaking at an event of some kind and she heard about us. That's what I understand to be the case. But, you know, it's been a while. So that's kind of our organization lore, I would say, is, you know, we definitely like to give credit to Natalie Grant.
That's amazing.
For giving us that first major gift that got us started. And yeah, so that started OEW Hope House. So that's our you know, aftercare for survivors. And at that time, our first safe house, we were serving minors. But now we have a safe house in North Carolina that serves young women and girls ages 17 to 24.
Oh, wow.
So that's like long term. You know, they can stay with us for up to 2 years. It's holistic trauma-informed care.
Wow.
And then we also do community-based services for minors. So any children from the age of 6 all the way up to young adults at 24.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's OEW Hope House.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's amazing. And yeah. That's so exciting. That age group, 17 to 24, is like such a key group when it comes to restoration
mm-hmm.
and bouncing back from kind of the, you know, the experience of human trafficking.
Absolutely. Such a developmental time of life is that, you know, when you're a young adult, 17 to 24, 25, that's when you really come into your own in a lot of ways, or just, you're just kind of actually getting your feet wet on like, who am I and what do I want to do? And it's when you're in, you know, graduating high school and maybe going to college, and that's what's been robbed of these, you know, girls and young women. And so being able to provide them a holistic, so like full wraparound care, is so beneficial and important, especially because a lot of these girls and young women have been trafficked since they were children. So, you know, it's, we really are trying, we're fighting a battle that's, they've been trapped in since they were kids. So even though, you know, 24 might sound like, oh, well, that's an adult, in a lot of ways they've been stuck because they've been, you know, trapped in trafficking.
Yeah.
And I will also add, we are a faith-based organization. So at the heart of what we do is our Christian faith, is our, you know, dedication to being the hands and feet of Jesus.
Amazing.
But we don't discriminate whatsoever in terms of the clients that we serve, but it is just a part of the mission is to ensure that we're, you know, not only helping the holistic healing of each survivor, but encouraging them to find a spiritual path as well in their healing journey.
That's amazing. And yeah. I know you said that a lot of these girls come who have been already trafficked for a long time since they were, you know, you said 6. And do you find that it's a lot of, you know, girls who are either brought here from another country, or are they born here?
They're oftentimes born here, actually. So I think it's kind of a misconception that trafficking in the United States is like foreign nationals. It's actually a small percentage. It's majority of those who are trafficked in the United States are American-born citizens. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you guys noticed if a lot of them are being trafficked from family members, or is it, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is it strangers?
The statistic that I know of, so since I'm the Youth for Abolition director and the communications manager, I'm not privy to all of the details in terms of who we serve. That's just for safety and security on their part and my part. But what I do know is that, you know, in recent years, we have had a survivor that was trafficked by family. So, this, you know, the coined term of that is familial trafficking. And so, yeah, she was trafficked from very young age, preschool age, by her family. And
wow.
Yeah, and came to us at about 18, 19 years old. But of course, there's other examples of in both the safe house environment and in our community-based services where we've seen youth trafficked online and then or abducted, things like that. So I've definitely heard the experiences of different, you know, what we say is all three, right? The familial, boyfriending, and abduction. But what I do know is that typically the majority is either the boyfriending kind of method, mm-hmm. so online or in-person recruitment, and then familial trafficking. So I would say it's probably mimics that general percentage. Yeah.
As you're describing just everything that happens, the reality of it, I'm just getting like a little mm-hmm. bit emotional about it because mm-hmm. When you said that a lot of the girls, they come, you know, robbed of the normal experience of going to graduating high school and going off to college, just that freedom to think about what are you going to do, and the stunting that happens, the, mm-hmm. you know, the delay that happens in their life. That's emotional to think about because I think, you know, anytime there's been like a disruption in someone's life, it's, you know, sometimes you need someone to help you, push you back up. And I'm sure the wraparound services is something that they don't even realize they need until maybe like a year later, they're still in the program. They're like, oh my mm-hmm. gosh, I didn't realize I needed all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a long healing process. And of course, every person is different. And, you know, like you said, like there's disruptions in everyone's life and we all go through different positive and negative experiences. But, you know, coming into this work and learning about what really young women around my same age, you know, I started working in this field at 23 and being kind of just resonating with the fact that, okay, these young women are my age, was really humbling. Because I can't fathom what that experience is. I can't even begin to truly understand how that would affect me. And so it's very humbling and very enlightening to kind of put yourself in those shoes and realize like it's a long journey. It's a long healing journey that they go on. But yeah, I'm just inspired by the women in our program that do work with them and you know, walk alongside them in that.
It is amazing. Yeah.
And of course, seeing like the actual, you know, even though it is disheartening and it is a dark reality that this is happening, it's happening in North Carolina, it's happening in every single state in the United States, and it's much more deeper and nuanced than I think people realize. Even though that is the reality, there's also the truth of restoration does happen and hope does happen. And, you know, these young women and just survivors in general find a way and they're true survivors. And it's so inspiring to see them, you know, come through the other side and find
their way. I love that. And I was going to say, I'm so inspired. Like even when you mentioned like the one story of the familial trafficking that happened, but she mm-hmm. when you said she came to us at 17, it's like, mm-hmm. wow. Because I heard the statistic that said about only 1% of human trafficking survivors are ever rescued or like,
That's you know, correct. Yeah.
out of the, of that
life.
Mm-hmm. Life. So mm-hmm. it's, for her to even be out of it, but now having to have that restoration, but also like God's mercy, you know, and grace.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's really cool because, you know, I hear of stories of different girls who go through the program and they, you know, some of them will come out of the program and they'll get baptized and they'll, they'll have a, you know, job and have an apartment of their own. Oof. And it's just incredible to see what they're able to do within 2 years. I mean, 2 years is a long time and it's also not. I mean, you know, when I think of just, it's incredible what they're able to accomplish and do in their lives over that span of time. And it's really empowering to witness. Yeah, really cool.
Sounds like a lot of resilience in them.
It is. Yeah, they're very resilient. Mm-hmm.
So how has your faith influenced your decision to be involved or to even work for an organization like this?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I always like to say that On Equals Wings was really an answered prayer for me. When I first heard about On Equals Wings or it came into my kind of life, I was about two or so years out of college. I was working in a corporate marketing communication space, and I had prayed a prayer that God would give me the opportunity to do something that helps people. I felt like I was doing, you know, I was just working, kind of living life day by day, whatever. And I didn't feel like I was really living out something that was helping people and doing something beneficial for the world. And so I prayed that prayer that, you know, he would give me an opportunity to do something beneficial to others and would allow me to use my gifts to do that. And then pretty quickly after that, I got in connection with On Equals Wings and came on board with them. And it's just been a blessing ever since, both personally and professionally. And yeah, it's been really cool. But yes, I think in terms of faith, just praying for something like that and just knowing that this came into my life and I was like, perfect, I want to do this, because I've always had a heart for kids. That's like my thing. It's just I think kids are, of course, the most innocent and precious beings on the earth, and that we need to protect them at all costs. I will say, like, you know, the first about really 6 months were difficult because, you know, it was a new job, but also it was my first time in the nonprofit space, but really it was my first time truly learning about human trafficking on a deeper level. And that was, it's a dark topic, and it's easy to want to shy away from it. It's easy to be like, okay, that's enough. I get the gist of it. Thank you. But I decided, you know, I want to keep going with it. And, you know, amazing. I think that's what the enemy wants us to do, right? Is like, oh, that's too dark. And, you know, I don't want to hear about, you know, children being trafficked, you know, in my state. But I think we have to be brave and bring it to light. And I think On Equals Wings is so unique because it's faith-based, and the people who are involved in it are so dedicated, because there's a bigger driving force behind it, you know, of like, this is our mission, you know, to help these kids and to stop this from happening.
Do you, is there any Bible verse that you, that encourages you in the fight against human trafficking?
I think my life verse is, it's embarrassing, I don't know the actual verse of it, but is it, I know it's a Timothy verse, and it goes, you know, for God has not given you a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. Some versions say, and self-control. But, you know, those three things, power and love and sound mind. So, you know, any confusion that might happen or doubt or like, oh my gosh, this is too heavy. It's like, no, I've been given a spirit of power, love, and a sound mind. I can do, and, you know, I also always, we always like to say, of course, God is, we can do all things through Christ who gives us strength. So,
oh, I love that one. Do you guys pray a lot together? Is it like a mission? Well, is it structured into the program? Like, hey guys, we're going to pray today.
So in terms of the safe house, so the actual aftercare for survivors, the programming typically is, you know, for example, on Sundays, they bring all this, all the clients to church, but they do not have to sit in on the service. So we never enforce anything on the women that we serve, because that wouldn't, of course, be fair to their healing journey. It needs to be voluntary for them. But it's embedded into the programming. You know, in the mornings they do a daily devotional, things like that. And then in terms of, I'm not involved in that though, so those are just kind of the high level things I know about. But in terms of our organization as a whole, our executive director does an amazing job at just kind of welcoming us in prayer, you know, before meetings, because a lot of us work remotely. So, you know, before we start a meeting, if it's, if it comes up, we're like, hey, let's pray about, you know, let's pray before we get into this.
That's awesome.
And I think that's a great way to kind of strengthen our resilience and focus on, you know, what's in front of us.
Yeah. And when, and then it's almost like realizing you're not alone in the fight. God's there and you're inviting him. It's like, it's almost like realizing, okay, it's your fight, Lord, but I'm here. Use me, Lord. But I'm sure it's there's a lot of challenges, and especially like as you said, it's involving children. These children are born with a purpose, and God has a plan for each one of them. So
yes,
it's you know, it's an all out kind of war, spiritual warfare.
It is. It truly is, though. I mean, that's really like that is what's going on. Is at the heart of everything that's going on is this spiritual warfare. We're just seeing it, you know, in the physical world in front of us. And so I definitely think prayer in any form is a need. It's a must.
Yes. I love that.
You know, for us to really have a chance, honestly, to both be like personally equipped and stay in working against it, but also just as a whole, as a collective, you know, it kind of helps us bond together and be like, okay, we're moving forward with this, yeah, which is cool.
That's awesome. We spoke a lot about the shelter. I wanted to kind of switch gears and talk about the Youth for Abolition movement happening in North Carolina.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could you tell us a little bit kind of like how it's structured and what's going on with that?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Youth for Abolition, it's based in North Carolina. We have chapters throughout North and South Carolina with the ability to start a chapter anywhere in the United States and really beyond. But so Youth for Abolition, it's a peer-to-peer youth-led human trafficking awareness program. And so high school and college students start chapters in their schools, youth groups, anywhere they congregate, anywhere they get together. And they teach each other about human trafficking using our award-winning curriculum. It's a 7-part curriculum in like a module PowerPoint format. And yeah, they just get together however often they want to. It's typically maybe 1 or 2 meetings a month. And they have a chapter president. So it's one student leader that really make sure that the chapter is moving forward and going through each lesson. And yeah, they get together and it's so empowering, you know, for the youth, because it's being that it's peer to peer and youth led, it makes a big difference, you know, because that's, I think, what sets our program apart from other anti-trafficking programs is that it really puts the power into the hands of the youth, because I mean, as we know, the average age that a child is entered into sex trafficking in the United States is 12 or 13 years old. Okay. So being able to empower them with the information that they need to keep themselves and their friends safe is like monumental.
Yeah. So. And I'm sure they're learning information that they're like, some of them are probably like, when am I going to use this? But then a situation comes up and they're like, hold on, this is sketchy.
Yeah, and then
it clicks.
For real. Yeah, it definitely does. And, you know, we've had instances where, you know, a chapter member after a lesson will come up to their chapter president and be like, hey, I'm concerned about this. Like, I think this might be going on. And, you know, it allows them to really reflect on like, okay, who am I talking to online, and who are like safe adults in my life, and what are like my friends involved in that might be, there might be something else going on. So really
that's
definitely
amazing. So yeah, there's a lot of reflection.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, education in general is just the best form of prevention, right? You know, it's the best way to help youth understand what is human trafficking. And because if you were to get involved in that at a young age, I'm not sure, depending on who you are, you might not even know like what's really happening to you. And you might think like, oh, this is my fault, or just especially the way traffickers lure and recruit youth. You know, if you don't know the law and a trafficker is, you know, telling you like, if you go to the police, they're not going to believe you. You know, you're actually like you're doing this willingly or whatever. You know, they can manipulate and brainwash. And if you're aware of like, okay, no, I know that's not true.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just in general, it's great education.
You know, it's one of the things that happened. So we, just so our listeners know, we actually met at the conference in Washington, D.C. this year. Mm-hmm. That's how I ran into Alexa. And so I was volunteering for the Just conference, right? Just to bounce back to the point you just said, a lot of times the youth don't know that, like, if they're in a situation like that, they wouldn't even know that they're being trafficked. Mm-hmm. So as a volunteer, we were in charge of like just covering for one of the sessions. And one of the session I was a part of was the survivor only one. Of course, I'm not a survivor, but I was just like, okay, I have the privilege just to be here. Listen in, a little fly on the wall. So it was crazy, but what the speaker, the host, she was a survivor, and she said, and there was 51 people, so 52 survivors there. And she said, raise your hand. And I'm just going to say that the survivors were all ages, you know, teenagers all the way up to like 70 years old. Yeah. People from all backgrounds, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, all different types of hair, colorful hair, straight hair, curly. I was like, there's everyone in this room.
It's very, yeah, and diverse.
Very, very diverse. And so the speaker, she said, raise your hand if someone had to tell you that you were trafficked. And I thought that was a weird question because I'm like, well, like, wouldn't it be obvious? Everyone raised their hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I mean, that's just and that's a whole module that we cover in Youth for Abolition is like traffickers and their methods, is like what they use to brainwash and manipulate. And you think, well, how would you not know? You know, it's easy. Yeah. If you've never experienced that, you're like, well, I would know. I would be able to if I was in this situation. But it's like, well, if you're, you know, trafficked from a young age, or even if you're an adult, we all have vulnerabilities, and that's what they prey on. That's what traffickers use to get you into this life. And yeah, you really wouldn't know like how that happens until it happens to you. And oftentimes those who get trafficked have either extreme vulnerabilities, like unfortunately some form of like drug addiction or homelessness, or you know, just mental health, whatever it may be. And maybe not even always. Sometimes if, you know, it can happen to, you know, a young girl who lives in a great two-parent household with a great neighborhood, great schooling, and it can still happen. Yeah. So I love that you mentioned like it spanned all different demographics, because it truly does. Like it does, trafficking doesn't discriminate based off of, you know, the color of your skin or how much money is in your bank account or whatever. It can happen to anyone.
Yeah, because the market basically is, you know, there's a demand for prostitution. Let's just say prostitution. Yeah. Sex. And so the demand sometimes is specific, I'm assuming, or sometimes it's, you know, and that's one of the things that's hard too, talking about the demand for it, because trafficking, we wouldn't even be here. We wouldn't be even talking about trafficking if someone wasn't willing to pay for a minor to have sex with a minor.
Yeah. And that's what I think is the darkest part. Like how I mentioned the first, you know, when I was first introduced to this issue, that's what I kept getting stuck on. Yeah. Is I was just like, my biggest question was like, well, why would a person want that? Why would a person want to purchase another human being, let alone a child? And just reconciling that and understanding like, okay, what causes that? And thankfully, like through education, you know, I was able to understand, okay, pornography plays a major role in that. And I think, you know, it's important as Christians to kind of open ourselves to the truth that like it's because of the fallen heart
nature.
Fallen nature of us as humans, And, you know, what we know is that it's like, I think 98 to 99% of sex buyers are men. And so an understanding of, you know, what habits cause you to go out and seek purchasing somebody. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what we know is that pornography use plays a major, major role in creating the demand for sex trafficking.
Wow.
Yeah.
And also like the types of porn they see also creates like a certain, I know it, like it creates a certain thing they want to try, yeah. You know, and it's just all perverted. So it's a hard, I think I would be with you that like, it is a hard challenging that part in addressing it. It makes me realize how much we need men in the conversation because,
yeah. It's so, you know, true.
It's an awkward conversation, obviously, because we're talking about something so hidden and like behind the scenes and, you know.
No one wants to talk about, like, I mean, no one wants to talk about it because it is weird. It's like an icky subject. Yeah. But I think also like that was something I've always been against pornography, mm-hmm. just in general. I was like, I think in general, it's just, I don't see how it's positive for anyone. Yeah. Especially as a woman, I'm like, that it's so degrading and objectifying of women. But, you know, the more I learned about human trafficking and like following amazing organizations like Exodus Cry and Fight the New Drug and seeing
Love Fight the New Drug, yes.
I know, Fight the New Drug is incredible. But they talk about, you know, the realities, like the facts, the statistics of what, how pornography not only affects relationships and your brain and your life in general, but also how it links to human trafficking, how it creates the demand. But I love that you mentioned, you know, including men in the conversation. I think that that's such a great, I want to touch on, we have a initiative called Real Men Protect.
Ooh.
And it was created by a young man who started our Montreat College chapter.
Okay.
He had been addicted to pornography since he was a, you know, young teenager. And when he came to Christ, he was like, you know, it healed him of that. And then, you know, he was leading a chapter and he created these T-shirts that we now sell that say Real Men Protect. And that was really born beautiful. Out of. Yeah, it's beautiful. It was really born out of his observation and understanding that, okay, the majority of those who are trafficked are girls and women. The majority of those who buy and traffic those girls and women are men. Yeah. And the majority of those people who are fighting human trafficking are women. The majority of those who are in social work, who are, you know, in the fight against it, happen to be a lot of women. Not to say, of course, there's amazing men as well who are, you know, helping to lead the charge, but for the most part, it's a lot of women.
Yeah.
And so he was like, we need to call men to action. We need to call young boys to action. And a part of that is calling them to be protectors, is to understand,
amen.
You know, women can, of course, actively protect themselves and can actively take care of themselves. But I think we need to be in partnership with each other as men and women and as boys and girls to like be on equal ground and help each other. And I think God is called. And like, you know, he was kind of just going back to the point of like, God called men to protect, to and not exploit. It's not to say men need to hover over women. It's to say men need to not exploit and not objectify, but instead stand with girls and women and say, you know, to their friends, don't watch pornography. Don't solicit nudes from this girl or whatever, like treat her like an equal. She's a human being.
I completely agree with you. It's not that women can't protect themselves, but it's like it would be nice to be able to walk outside and not have to be like looking over your shoulder like am I okay. And really knowing that that, you know, we're having a change in the culture where it's not just, hey, well, she was wearing something that was inappropriate, or why is she walking late at night? And it's like, well, I'm here. Like, you know, like, why do I have to be on this alert? But I understand there's, you know, there's criminals out there. They're, you know, and they do their activities in the nights. But yeah. I'm just saying an example. But women were not, for example, in the high school, let's say, in the PE locker rooms, we're not in the guys' locker room. Like, we can't go in there and be like, hey, guys, let's, you know, educate you. It's like, no, we need them to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, yeah, exactly. That's the whole, I mean, that's the whole peer-to-peer thing again, is that, you know, boys are going to listen to men. Mm-hmm. For the most part, you know, and that's a normal thing, right? Like, as a young woman, I'm going to look up to older women as a positive influence in my life. And same for boys. They're going to look at, you know, and when you look at our culture, you kind of see how over time there has been that degradation of like the objectification of women. If you just listen to our music, look at our TV shows, look at our social media, look at how women have been pushed to really kind of self-objectify through
100%. Like
You go on Instagram, you go on TikTok, you just kind of look at our celebrities and our influencers and just our culture. Like, you listen to any rap song, you listen to any pop song. There was a podcast that Gwyneth Paltrow was on, and I actually love this because she kind of talked about it. She was like, girls today, you know, they're watching pornography too.
Yeah.
And they think that they have to do that and perform in that way in order to get a boy's attention. And that's so heartbreaking.
I mean,
it's deeply heartbreaking because we know that the average age of exposure to pornography is getting younger and younger as well. And pornography is such a, it's such a tool of traffickers. It's a way they promote trafficking. It's a way that they, it's an extra way that they exploit their victims by selling and showing the actual victimization. And it's a way that they prime the youth of today to open their hearts and minds to this concept of sexualizing themselves and others. And it's just so bad. But I think Exodus Cry does such an amazing job at highlighting that, and so does Fight the New Drug. So I love to shout them out. You know, if you're if anyone listening is interested in kind of learning more about this subject. And I think Fight the New Drug does a great job at not shaming people because it's a lot more common than we realize that people are struggling with pornography addiction or and so it's important that people are given resources to get over that, because that way you're not contributing to sex trafficking.
I love that you said that. And to even add to that, the conversation, I think there is a lot of shame in talking about anything done with like pornography and everything. Like, I think for the most part, from what I've read, like it isolates people. It tends to put a lot of shame on people, and they kind of tend to kind of be more secluded, which is the opposite of what we were made for. We were made to be in connection with other people and community, joyful, free, and not, you know, restricted by like basically their identity is wrapped up in this thing that is happening, right? And they're locked in. And we know, like, spiritually speaking, there's a lot more stuff going on there. A lot of
the
things.
The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And it's not just, you know, the literal terms of that, but also like, you know, stealing your peace, stealing your joy, killing your will to, you know, actually connect with people and, you know, we all have a purpose in life. And I think, it's just, you know, we could definitely talk for hours about the harms of it.
It's a huge conversation, and as you mentioned, like the kids are running into it, you know, at a younger age, and the less we're able to talk about it, you know, that means the more power to the porn industry, because if people are ashamed to say, hey, you guys, we need to talk about this is bad, you know.
I want to empower parents to really talk to their kids about it, because a lot of parents will say, oh, my kid would never, but you never know. You truly never know. And a lot of times a child's first exposure to pornography is from another friend, is from a peer. And we know, I heard recently, you know, in the news that more and more child on child sexual abuse is happening in schools.
Oh, wow.
And more child on child, like, you know, pornography exposure is happening. And again, it's not only from like a brain health perspective and emotional, like mental health perspective of how that could affect a child to see like that kind of violent imagery. But also to like, yeah, just in general, the effects of that is, I think we're going to see more and more how detrimental that is for our society. But I want to empower parents to, you know, look out for resources to really find ways to talk to their kids about it. So I think a great resource from Shared Hope International, which is the conference you and I met at, they have Protect Young Eyes, is if people want to look that up, that's a great way to kind of dip your toe into understanding, okay, how can I protect my kids? How can I
I'll link everything in the show notes.
Talk to my kids about this. Yeah. It's a good idea. Okay. But I just like to shout that out.
It is an awkward conversation just because you're mentioning, you know, you have – you yourself as a parent have to be available. Once you start having this conversation – they might not ask you everything at one time. They might, you know, the child might, let's say the child's 10 and they come and they're like, hey, mom, like I ran into this thing. Like, what is this? And then if you, the way they respond to that child will either invite more conversations in the future when things come up, or it might shame the child and say, like, why are you looking at that? Or, you know.
Right.
So it's
that's a big thing. That's a big thing. Like you said, the isolation. I mean, that's the thing. Some people might be struggling with it and feel really isolated because there's shame and it's like, I'm not going to go talk to anyone about this. But that's where if you kind of open the conversation, or, you know, being able to find resources if you're not ready to talk to somebody about it, being able to look for yourself and be like, okay.
And I just can. scream later, you know, like. Yeah. Be like, oh, that's okay. Thank you for telling me. And then behind the scene, like, don't scream in front of your child. Just pretend it's nothing is happening. It's just a regular conversation. And then just, you know, there's a lot of wisdom. So I think what you're saying is true. Like, we do need a lot more information on how to communicate this subject. And also, like, for parents to feel confident in themselves, like, being able to, you know, share this. But when you think about it, like, how many of us spend every single day even thinking about this subject, you know, it's not common. I think it's, at least for me, like, it's not common to consistently think about, oh, like, how do I share pornography issues with my child? It's not really, you know, but in the grand scheme of it, when you do, you know, like, have conversations like this, you're equipping your child to make smarter decisions, you know?
Absolutely. So
we definitely went on a tangent. But it's a good one because it's wrapped around, like, the youth and also, like, the generation, and then also, like, what we can do to continue the conversation and change the culture. So since the I read online that you guys have had 650 young survivors who have gone through
700 now. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We have now served
over 700 youth since 2009, ages 6 to 24.
Wow. And what does it look like for the types of services? I know you mentioned wrapped around. And so I'm assuming there's like counseling. Do they do fun activities, like maybe go to Disney World or like?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So OEW Hope House, we provide holistic trauma-informed model of care. So the survivors in our program, in the safe house specifically, so it's the 17 to 24 year olds, they receive long-term housing, so they can stay with us for up to 2 years. They receive 24-hour care. There's like on-site education management. So if they needed to get their GED, if they want to, you know, take specific courses, there's a specific educator, you know, on site for that. They receive any form of therapy that they need, of course. They have mentors, life skills training. They receive all of the healthcare that they need. Of course, a lot of these, you know, girls and young women come to us with a lot of health issues and just need for focus on that. So, of course, we have healthcare. We have individualized treatment plan. So each girl is given individualized treatment plan that is, like I said, holistic. So it's looking at every single component of their healing journey. So that's psychological, educational, emotional, physical, spiritual, legal, and social. So we definitely take them on field trips. They are safe houses. So amazing because it's you know, we have like a garden and a chicken coop, so
that's nice, you
know, really cool things that allow it to feel, you know, they're kind of in nature. And you know, they're taken on field trips. We do equestrian therapy.
I love that.
The legal healing aspect, so if there's any any help they need in terms of you know, with legal issues that came from their trafficking. And then, yeah, we already kind of touched on the spiritual as well. Yeah.
Wow. So that's a lot of services. And I'm sure that means there's a lot of cost to the program as well.
Yeah.
That's how can people get connected, or, like, you know, if they want to donate, be support of these programs?
Oh, thank you for asking. Yes, it is. It is a very time extensive and costly thing to care for one survivor, but of course it's worth it. but if anyone wants to donate to On Equals Wings and any of our programs, you can go to oewhope.org. So that's the first three letters of On Equals Wings, or, you know, On Equals Wings, OEW, and then hope.org. And we have a donation link on that website. And if you donate to that, you're donating to On Equals Wings as a whole. So, of course, that goes to all three of our programs. And that would be amazing. Of course, donations allow us to continue to run, to prevent crimes against children, and also to serve the survivors in our community-based services and in our aftercare program.
It's amazing. What do you hope comes next for the anti-trafficking movement?
Wow, that's a big question. I think as you can tell from kind of our tangent, I would love to see, of course, more men in the fight. I would love to see, you know, I think we're seeing a more focus on demand reduction. And so, you know, our initiative with Real Men Protect is to do that exactly, is to engage more men and boys and, you know, bring more education in that, you know, more anti-pornography, more of a discussion on buyers. You know, I don't think we talk enough about, we talk about the traffickers a lot. We talk about the survivors a lot, but talking about, okay, who's actually going out there and buying, purchasing, you know, for sex, and how can we stop that, and also offer them healing in a way, if you will, as well as, you know, I guess, I don't know if reprimand is the right word.
Whatever consequences.
Right, that's the right word. I, of course, as Youth for Abolition director, and with my focus being on prevention and education, I'd love to see peer-to-peer youth-led programs like Youth for Abolition grow. I'd love to see more chapters start in the Carolinas and beyond. We have multiple chapters, you know, in high schools and colleges. And seeing these youth mobilize and, you know, share the information with their peers it's so inspiring and it's so beautiful to see. So I'd love to see more chapters start. So if anyone listening is interested in trying to start a chapter, or encouraging your high school or college student to start a chapter at their at their school or a youth church group, wherever they are, please feel free to go to youthforabolition.org and contact us through that. And we're happy to help you get started. It's really easy to actually start a chapter because we're able to do all of the training over Zoom. All of our material is online. Okay. And it's free. It's free to get involved. It's free to start a chapter.
Oh, awesome.
And we're super hands-on. We have a dedicated coach that is that's assigned to each chapter. Mm-hmm. And a coach is a previous chapter president. So they have the experience of leading a chapter. And they're usually either a college student or, you know, graduate student or beyond. And they're assigned each chapter and they help each chapter run throughout the year.
Oh, wow.
So that they can, you know, really feel like they're making a difference. Because I didn't mention this, but in addition to presenting the curriculum to their mm-hmm. peers throughout the year, each chapter is encouraged to also have some form of awareness event in their community. So they actually bring awareness to their broader community at their school or church, you know, wherever they are. And that's also really cool to see because it's such an empowering experience to see these, you know, kids on stage talking about a really heavy topic, but a topic that affects their generation more than any other.
Wow.
So yeah, I'd love to see more chapters get started in 2024. That's my dream.
And for them, do they need like a sponsor, like an adult mm-hmm. sponsor for their schools or for colleges?
Yes, thank you for asking. Yeah, every chapter, like I said, is assigned a coach. But in terms of in person, they need to have some kind of adult. So that's an advisor slash sponsor. That could be a teacher, a guidance counselor, a you know, youth pastor, whatever it is, to be involved with them. Just to be present for the meetings and help make sure that they're fitting the criteria of the context that they're in, you know, because we have criteria in terms of our end, but if we're not in your state or city, you definitely need a adult present.
Okay.
With you. Yeah.
And they, so just to kind of get an understanding of how the time commitment for these, for the group, like for the adult or how I know you mentioned they meet once or twice a month. And the curriculum, six classes, right? Or six units?
Yes. Yeah, it is. We have seven modules total.
Seven.
And so it's really one of it is seven modules total with an introductory module. So seven modules. And that's, you know, the topics that we cover is like human trafficking 101, traffickers and their methods. We talk about social trafficking, so we really hone in on social media and how to be safe on social media and gaming. And, you know, what roles do they play on in recruiting victims for human trafficking? Then module four, we talk about buyers and demand. Mm. So who are the buyers? What drives the demand? So that's really where we talk about pornography as well. And then module five, we talk about the wounded and the healed. So who are the victims? Who are the survivors? What are, you know, what's a safe house? So kind of talking about OBW Hope House. And then module six, which is one of my favorites, is our human value. So we talk about what's the value of a human life. How does having a strong sense of self-worth prevent you from being trafficked? And then we have the students.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, kind of review for themselves, like, okay, what are my virtues versus vices, and who do I want to be in life? What are the values that I'm going to have moving forward? And then our final module is my future impact. So we talk about, you know, like what's the roles of law and law enforcement, and then what can I do moving forward as an abolitionist?
Wow. I love that word. Abolitionist.
Abolitionist.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think it's very powerful and it's also like very historical.
It is.
It's powerful.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go. I was just saying it's powerful.
It is. I know. I love saying it. I love, you know, being able to say, especially if you're a high school or college student, saying like, I'm an abolitionist. I'm working to abolish modern day slavery, because that's really what we're doing. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of kids in our country that are enslaved in sex trafficking. Yeah. And I think that's another part of it is in the conversation about it, you know, if we're at the very least, you're just talking about it with your friends and family and spreading awareness, you're being an abolitionist. You're helping, you know, fight against this evil that's in the world. And so, yeah, I love it because Youth for Abolition, you know, they're abolitionists. Yes. They're doing what they can to abolish trafficking.
And have you encountered any student who has picked up like a major in college or, you know, that this work has inspired their future when it comes to like their career choices and just things like that? Question.
Yeah. One of our coaches, she started a chapter at her high school. And so now she's a coach with us. She's a senior in college. And if I recall correctly, you know, she mentioned that she wants to work in the kind of nonprofit space because of her experience working with human trafficking. And you know, she's really passionate about doing anything she can to, yeah, you know, prevent this and
that's amazing.
Fight against it. And we had a new chapter that's starting in 2024. And it's a young high school girl who is going to be the lead of that. And, you know, she came up to me after an event and shared that she'd been passionate about this since she was like 12 years old. Aww. And she was like, I want to actually do some kind of like rescue work or, you know, really intercede to stop this from happening. And
she's now, warrior.
I know, right? And it's just exactly, you know, younger generation, they're so mobilized, like they're so like justice oriented. So, you know, that's another thing we can't minimize their impact. Like they have the ability to really talk about this and make a big difference in this. But yeah, it's really cool. It's really empowering to see, or not empowering. It's exciting to see how, you know, having a chapter encourages these students to
change the world.
Change the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love this. I love the work that you're doing. I just want to continue to champion you guys. I know that it's a beautiful thing you guys are doing, and I know it's a lot of work.
There it is.
So we're throwing all the prayers at you guys. We're joining you in 2024 with all the prayers and just everyone follow them on social media. I'll definitely link all your information to the podcast here. And I'm definitely going to be sharing I'll reshare your posts all the time as well.
Thank you.
More people know. Yeah, it's so important. And I hope you guys do continue to grow and stay strong. And any last words that you want to just share?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, I think I would say that if you have it in your heart to do anything at all, you know, we all have a part to play in preventing human trafficking and in helping the survivors. And it doesn't have to be in this major way. You don't have to, you know, do it for your job or whatever. It can be as simple as donating. It can be volunteering on the weekends, you know, helping us start Youth for Abolition chapters. And it can truly be as simple as talking about it and, you know, taking advantage of the resources that Jessica shares and, you know, continuing to listen to this awesome podcast. But I want to just thank you, Jessica, for having me. This has been such a great conversation. And I'm just grateful to you that you're, you know, using a platform like this to, you know, encourage conversation about this issue. And so I'm really grateful to be here and I've gotten to talk to you.
Yes, thank you. And I know we're going to connect again.
Of course.
Yeah. Soon. And of course, this is a heavy topic, as we mentioned, and I know it is very daunting, and it's talking about things that people don't want to talk about.
Absolutely.
But as we have this conversation, we are changing, you know, our culture. We have to change the way we see people, the way we see how we use our time and what we value in society. And I just want to, you know, emphasize there's a scripture that says like where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So that's like an encouraging, you know, motivation about when we do donate to organizations, like our heartstrings are attached, you know, like we
love that.
Yeah. Like we're supporting this organization, and then we want to be like, okay, what's the follow up? You know, what's happening? We want to hear about it. And so I want to just, again, encourage people to donate and stay connected. Thank you everyone for listening, and catch you next time. Thanks, Alexa.
Bye. Thank you.